I am thrilled to be here at the fourth annual Watermark Conference for Women. In my own small, very small way, as I tell my kids a lot of times when I leave the house, I'm here to help with the advancement of women leaders from across the state and support this community that I'm super, super proud to be a part of. The Conference for Women offers a blend of practical tools and advice, like in this session, inspiration and peer involvement and networking. Through a mix of sessions like this one, we are committed to your empowerment and inspire you to make your mark in your companies, your careers, and your community. It is my pleasure to introduce Laura Vanderkamp, who is going to be leading this breakout session, The Balance Quest, Building a Life That Works for You. We have an amazing hour in store, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it immensely. Laura is the author of several time management and productivity books, including this one that I'm halfway through. I Know How She Does It, What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast, and 168 Hours. Her work has appeared in publications including Fast Company, Fortune, The Wall Street Journal, and the USA Today. She lives outside Philadelphia with her husband and four children, and please put your hands together and welcome her to the stage.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you all very much for being here. I know it's a little later in the day. 3 o'clock is not exactly the world's most energetic time. So I thought we'd do something maybe that will help us get moving a little bit. I know we have a lot of extremely busy women in this room, maybe a few men as well. But I thought it'd be fun to find the busiest person in the room. So we're going to take a quick quiz. You should give yourself a point for each yes answer. Keep track of this. Keep track of your score. And there is a prize, so you can answer honestly. All right? So question one, give yourself a point if you get more than 100 emails a day. Real emails here, not J.Crew ads. All right? Question two, give yourself a point if you did work before 6 a.m. or after 11 p.m. in the last week. No, just one. Come on. We have people trying to get themselves ahead here. All right, question three. Give yourself a point if you flew somewhere other than here in the last week. Question four. Give yourself a point if you were double booked for a time slot in the last week. Well, question five. Give yourself a point if you actually attempted to take two meetings or do two phone calls at the same time. All right, question six. Give yourself a point if you have kids at home. Question seven, give yourself another point if you have three or more of them, or if any of them are under age three. If you have three under three, just give yourself all the points. That's fine. All right. Question eight, give yourself a point if you attended a conference or networking event other than this one in the last week. Question nine, give yourself a point if you ate a meal in the car or on public transit in the last week. And question 10, give yourself a point if you schedule things in less than 10-minute increments. So on your calendar, it says 10 to 10:08, do this. All right, so add up your score, add up your score. We're going to do the no opt-out version on this. I want everyone to please stand up. Please stand up. We're going to have a little bit of energy here. Please stand up. All right, I want you to sit down if you have 0 or 1 points. Sit down if you have 2 points, 3 points. 4 points, 5 points, 6 points, 7 points. Do you guys have eight? Does anyone have nine? All three of you. Okay. Does anyone have 10? Oh, no. Okay. I'm just going to declare that you're the busiest person in the room, okay? Let's give her a round of applause. Yay. What's your name?
Whitney.
Whitney. All right. So Whitney is the busiest person in the room. She gets an audio book because I know she doesn't have time to read. So her, you can come take that. All right. Anyway, as you can see, we've got a lot of busy people in here, although not quite as busy as the morning session where we had some tens. So maybe all the busy people go to the morning and then they take off. But as you can see, we're all busy. And as you're looking forward to your illustrious lives, you may be wondering if you will always be busy. And the answer is yes. But I hope to convince you that however busy you are, you can build the life you want in the time you got. To do that, though, we've got to rethink some common misperceptions about time. We're going to learn 7 of my favorite time management strategies today that I hope will help you make more of your time both at work and at home so you can get more done and feel better about it. First, just a little bit about me. People sometimes ask me how I came to the topic of time management. Unfortunately, it is not because I am always on time. I do try to be, but I was, in fact, once late to my own speech on time management, which was all kinds of fun, as you can imagine me like running in that door like 5 minutes late. It's like, yes, I'm the time management expert, pardon my appearance. The truth is, I came to this topic a couple years ago and I realized something that is dumbfoundingly obvious in retrospect, but at the time seemed very profound, which is that we all have the same amount of time. We all have 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week. So when you find people who are doing amazing things professionally, as I'm sure you've met many people here today who are doing that, and then you find out that they're also doing amazing things personally too. I mean, they're raising happy families, or they're doing amazing things in their community, or whatever else it is. It's not that those people have any more time than the rest of us. It may be that they are allocating their hours in interesting ways that the rest of us can learn from. And so I've decided to spend my time studying these people's schedules. What are they doing with their hours? If they keep track of their time, what do their schedules look like? How do they think about their time? And so the 7 strategies I want to share today come out of studying people's schedules and those interviews. So since we want to be on time here to get you out of here so you can go get your glass of wine at the reception, let's go ahead and dive right in. So the first strategy is to mind your hours. People sometimes ask me, you know, if I want to spend my time better, what is the first thing I should do? And I say, well, you should figure out where the time is going now. Because if we don't know where the time is going now, how do we know if we're going to change the right thing? It may be that something we think is a problem really isn't. Maybe something that we didn't even consider we're spending way more time on than we thought. So we should make sure we're working from good data. Best way to get the data is to keep track of your time. Maybe for a few days, but ideally for a week, right? A good week is a good chunk of time. And you know, there's lots of ways you can do that. I track my time on these weekly spreadsheets, which just pretend you didn't hear spreadsheet. I promise I'll do better than that. I'll try to be more interesting than the spreadsheets. But you can do that. You can use dozens of time tracking apps on the market. You can walk around with a little notebook if you want to look all artsy. Like, the tool itself doesn't matter what you track your time with. The point is that you do it. And when I suggest people try keeping track of their time for a few days or a week, I get a little bit of pushback about the idea. And as I've explored this pushback with people, I've realized it's a lot like if anyone has ever tried to lose weight, you know that nutritionists will tell you to keep a food journal. And that is because it works. I mean, there's pretty good evidence, peer-reviewed journals, all that, that people who write down what they eat lose significantly more weight than people who do not. So you think we'd be like all over that, right? But the truth is, we just don't want to know. Like, we don't want to know that we grabbed 6 chocolate macaroons from the kitchen next to our home office over the course of the day. Just a purely hypothetical example. We don't want to know. Same thing with time. We don't want to know how much time we are wasting. So let's just get this out of the way right now. We all waste time, okay? I waste time. You waste time. I don't know if Whitney wastes time. But the rest of us, we all waste time, okay? Keeping track of our time is not about figuring out how much time we are wasting. It is about making sure we're not telling ourselves stories about our lives that aren't actually true. And when it comes to time, we've got all kinds of stories we tell ourselves. Some of my favorite, how many hours we work. I mean, here we are out in Silicon Valley. I'm sure many of you being in tech companies and other companies out here like that have been part of such scintillating discussions on just how many hours people are working. It goes like this: oh, I worked 60 hours last week. 60. I wish I worked 60. I work 70. Oh, 70. 70 is my light season. And so on it goes, right? I once had a young man at a party tell me he was working 180 hours a week at his startup, which is very, very impressive if you actually multiply 24 times 7. It turns out there's once a study comparing people's estimated work weeks with time diaries. They found that people claiming 75-plus hour weeks were off by about 25 hours. You can guess in which direction, right? And so what it is, what's happening is, you know, if people are feeling tired, feeling overworked, feeling like they're working a lot, they're going to put a high number on it. Is that number actually true? Well, who knows, right? It sounds like a good number, but let's make sure we know, because then when we have the data, we can work with that and decide if we're happy with it, if that number needs to change one way or the other. But let's know what it is, right? We do this with, you know, leisure time, probably in the opposite direction. And people will tell me, like, I have no time for myself. And then, you know, you look at their time log and it'll be like Big Bang Theory. Curious. I wonder what that is. I don't know. Is that leisure time? And what it is usually is that people feel like they don't have enough time for the things they want to do. They feel like they don't have enough leisure time. And so in their mind, it becomes none, right? But not as much as I want is a very different story than none, right? None, what can you do about? But not as much as I want, you can. And the other reason to think about this question, to make sure we have good data, is that sometimes we're telling ourselves stories that really don't serve us. I looked at the time log not long ago from a woman who was an executive at a tech company out here. She had been telling herself this story that, like, I never see my kids, right? I'm an executive at a major tech company, ergo, I must never see my children, right? These are the sort of stories we tell about successful women. And so she had the story in her head. She tracked her time. We saw she was working about 48 hours a week, which if you do that math where people exaggerate by 25 hours, it's like a 73-hour work week, right? But she was working in such a way, she was coming home at a reasonable hour, hanging out with her kids, doing more work at night after they went to bed. So basically, like, every minute they were there and home from school, she was with them. And she looked at this and she's like, oh, I used to feel guilt. I don't feel guilt anymore. So that is another good reason to make sure we have the right data. So if you decide to track your time, I really hope you will. Pretty simple. Just write down what you're doing as often as you remember. In as much detail as you think will be helpful for you, try to keep going for a week. Look at the major categories, add them up, work, sleep, time in the car, probably a lot of time in the car out here, exercise, volunteering, time with your family, whatever it is you do. And then ask yourself a few questions about it. First, what do I like most about my schedule? It's your life, so hopefully something's working great and we should celebrate whatever that is. Second question, what do I want to do more of with my time? And the third question, what do I want to get off my plate? So that is strategy one, mind your hours. Strategy two, look forward. So when it comes to time, I find we spend a lot of energy thinking about that last question. What do I want to spend less time doing? And if you read a lot of time management literature, which I will admit I do, you find that a lot of it is structured this way. Like, we're going to help our readers, our listeners, our viewers find an extra hour in the day. And the idea is we'll shave bits of time off everyday activities, add it up, we'll have time for the good stuff. And I keep reading these pieces and hoping I'm going to find some amazing tip that's going to, like, transform my life, the perfect life hack, and all will be solved. And then I read through it as stuff like, soak your pasta before you boil it, so it takes less time to boil, in case pasta boiling is consuming a lot of your life. Or clean the shower while you're in it. Or my personal favorite, which was actually put in all seriousness in a story, is that if you send a lot of emails where you're writing OK, you should just write K instead of OK. Because I know I have always felt very inefficient while typing the letter O. So. And if you think about it, you know, like, we're not going to somehow build the lives we want by only typing K instead of OK. Like, this has it completely backwards. We don't build the lives we want by saving time. We build the lives we want, and then time saves itself. It is so much more efficient to focus on that second question. What do I want to spend more time doing in my life? And so when I do workshops with groups, I actually have them come up with a really long list. Like, I have people think through, like, anything you might want to spend more time doing. There's probably things in your professional life, goals you might have, things you want to spend more time on. Maybe it's mentoring people, you enlist the people you want to mentor and meet with. Maybe it's conferences you want to go to. Maybe you want to write a white paper, write a book someday. You know, those are the things you want to spend more time doing and work. Or maybe in your personal life, maybe you want to travel to Italy or travel to, who knows, somewhere else. Or you want to go to that state park that's 2 hours away that you have yet to visit despite living here for 7 years. Or you want to join the choir, you want to, you know, run a 5K. These are all things that we would like to do with our time. And many times we tell ourselves we have no time, so we don't even think of these things. But I want people to make a really good long list. And then once you have this list, you start thinking about, well, how can I start choosing some of these things that I really want to focus more of my time on now? And two practical ways to start thinking about this. One, on the professional front, a lot of people coming up to, you know, just went through sort of the end of year performance review process at the end of 2017. And so it might help to think about, you know, what we want to spend more time on in the next year, to think about giving yourself a prospective professional performance review, excuse me. So I want you to pretend that it is the end of 2018, and you are giving yourself a performance review. And it has been an amazing year for you professionally. What 3 to 5 things did you do that made it so amazing? So you can write these 3 to 5 professional goals in this prospective performance review. You can do this for your personal life too. And people send less of these now than they used to, you know, with the rise of photo holiday cards. But and for many years, I was getting a lot of Christmas cards that contained these folded up sheets of colored paper on which was printed what was known as the family holiday letter, which always a fascinating genre of literature. It tends to go on about how amazing everyone in the household is. But it serves a purpose, which is it tells your friends and family what you did in your personal life that mattered to you in the course of the year. So it might help to think about writing one of these. If it was the end of 2018, and you were writing a letter to your friends and family about what you and the people you care about did during the year, and it had been an absolutely amazing year for you, what 3 to 5 things would you have done? And so now, between the prospective performance review and this 2018 family holiday letter, we have a list of 6 to 10 things that we want to spend more time on over the next year. And we can keep this list somewhere where we can look at it a lot, because it's going to start informing our choices and informing our schedules as we look forward to what we want to spend more time on in the near future. So that is strategy 2. Strategy 3, first things first. So I'm taking this phrase from one of my favorite time management and productivity books, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Has anyone read it here? All right, good. Yeah, we always good to see the productivity junkies in the room. It's by the late Stephen Covey. Great book. If you've never read it, you should pick up a copy. Funny thing about it, I was rereading it not long ago. It came out in 1990. I mean, they've had subsequent editions come out, but the first edition came out in 1990, which was before most people had access to email. And he writes about how people spend a lot of time on things that are urgent but not important. And I was pondering, in 1990, what were those things? Like, we didn't have an inbox. What was it? Like, what were we wasting time on that? I don't know, maybe we were like going through our fax pile very carefully. Anyway, he says first things first. What this means in the context of time management is that time is highly elastic. We cannot make more time, but time will stretch to accommodate what we choose to put into it. And I saw this best from one time log that I collected, and I apologize if anyone Googled me and listened to my TED Talk, which thank you for doing that. I told this story, but I like the story, so I'm going to tell it again, which is a woman whose water heater burst, okay? She had gone out for Wednesday night for something, comes home to find that her water heater's broken. There's now water all over her basement. She's dealing with the immediate aftermath that night. Next day, she's got plumbers coming in. Day after that, a professional cleaning crew. And all this is being recorded on the time log that she's keeping for me. And it winds up taking 7 hours of her week, which if you think about it, 7 hours is like finding an extra hour in the day. As we talked about it, though, she said, well, you know, it's funny, because I think if we'd looked at this at the start of the week and said, well, let's find 7 hours. Let's magically find 7 hours in your schedule. Maybe we could use it for mentoring people at work, or 7 hours to train for a triathlon, or 7 hours to make headway on reading War and Peace. I think she would have been like, no, I cannot find 7 hours for those things. Can't you see how busy I am? But when she had to find 7 hours, because there is water all over her basement, she finds 7 hours. Time is highly elastic. We cannot make more time, but time stretches to accommodate what we need or want to put into it. And so the key to time management is treating our priorities as the equivalent of that broken water heater. We choose to get to them first things first. And to get at this, I like to use some language from one of the busiest people I ever interviewed. She was running a successful business. She also happened to have 6 children. So I'm sort of like blown away. Like, where do you find time for everything? Tell me your secrets. She said, well, it's pretty simple. Everything I do, every minute I spend, is my choice. And rather than say, I don't have time to do X, Y, or Z, she'd say, I don't do X, Y, or Z because it's not a priority. I don't have time really means it's not a priority. Because if you think about it, that is more accurate language. I could tell you I don't have time to iron my sheets, but that is not true. If somebody offered to pay me $100,000 to iron my sheets, I would be all over it. Since that is not going to happen, I can acknowledge this is not a matter of lacking time. It is that I don't want to iron my sheets, right? Using this language reminds us that time is a choice. And granted, there may be horrible consequences to making different choices. Your boss says you should show up at a meeting on Monday. You should probably be there. But certainly over the long run, we have the power to fill our lives with the things that deserve to be there. People say, okay, that sounds great. Awesome. How do I do that practically? Well, here's something to think about. We live our lives in weeks. We often think of our lives in days, but we live our lives in weeks, a topic we'll return to in a minute. Putting first things first means thinking through our weeks before we are in them. I find a really good time to do this is Friday afternoon. Huh, conveniently enough, you can take a little bit of time to do that this afternoon. But Friday afternoon, if you work a Monday through Friday schedule, I don't know about you, Friday afternoon is not my peak productivity time. Usually kind of sliding into the weekend, dreaming about that first glass of wine. So if we're not willing to start anything new, it can be easy to sort of waste this time, but you might be willing to think about what future you should be doing. And by spending a little bit of time planning, you can turn what would be wasted time into some of your most productive time of the week. Anyway, just make yourself a short three-category priority list for the next week. Career, relationships, self. Making a three-category list reminds us that there should be something in all three categories. It is pretty hard to make a three-category list and then leave categories blank, right? So that right there will nudge you to have a more balanced life. But just a short list, 2 to 3 items in each, and then look over the next week and see where you can plan them in. And then here's the real pro tip. See if you can front-load the week. Right? The earlier in the week you can get to this stuff, the better. So if you think about it, maybe if one of your big goals for the year, one of these looking forward 2018 prospective performance review goals is to get a promotion. Well, you might think, huh, well, what's a priority for the next week I could do to execute against that? Well, you know, I have a friend in another department who just did get a big promotion. I'm going to have coffee with her. All right. You got that. Then you know, well, I have this friend on the relationship front. I have a friend who's going through a really difficult time. I want to give her a call. Make sure that's on the list for the next week. On the personal front, you want to go to that exercise class you've been talking about for the last 6 months and have yet to get to. Yeah, you think I didn't know about that one, right? So we have this list. And so then we say, okay, well, when can I do this? Well, Friday afternoon, I'm going to email my friend in the other department, set up coffee for Monday. She emails back. It's on your calendar. Great. You make a note on your calendar for Monday lunch break. You're going to call your friend. You see that the class you want to take is offered Monday night, so you call up your spouse and be like, hey, I have an idea. Maybe I could go to the gym Monday night. You could go Tuesday night. How does that sound? Awesome. Okay. You've just hit all these things by the end of Monday. Like, is it going to be a great week? Pretty much, right? Like, you could just coast the rest of the time because you've already done these very important things. So that's how we keep making progress, by putting first things first. All right, so that was strategy 3. Strategy 4. Move time around. So when I have studied the studied the schedules of successful women, I have noticed some fascinating things. I recently did a time diary project that actually looked at 1,001 days in the lives of women who had professional jobs, also happened to have children at home. Many ways one can be busy in life, but that is certainly one of them. I had them keep track of their time, so I had all this data I could look through, and I found some interesting things. Of the women I studied, 3/4 did something personal during their work hours in the course of their diary week. So, you know, they visited a kid's class, they met a friend for lunch, they did a workout, something like that. Flip side of that is also true. 3/4 did something work-related during what one might consider personal hours, nights, weekends, early mornings. I think the two are totally related. Work-life integration is the name of the game these days for successful women. Some people don't like that. You know, they want work to be work, home to be home, never the two should meet, and that's fine. You can totally do that. But for a lot of women, being flexible about when stuff happens, moving time around to make it all fit, and in fact, leaving a lot of hours in play for either personal or work-related stuff, means they can work the hours they need to in order to succeed, yet have a full personal life too. So a couple strategies I saw a lot for moving time around to make it all fit. One is working what I call a split shift. So let's say you need to work long hours, and yet you also have something you want to do in your personal life. You either want to see young kids who go to bed pretty early, or you want to volunteer, you want to hang out with friends, you want to exercise. You have a couple choices. One is you can keep working until all the work is done. You come home too late to do anything except watch TV, and then you can feel sad. So that is option A. Option B, if you have some flexibility in your job, is to leave work before all the work is done, go do this wonderful thing you have in your personal life, you know, hang out with your kids, volunteer, exercise, and then do more of the work at night, later on, like after the kids go to bed, or after you've met with your third friends or volunteered or whatever it is you do. And that way you are trading off work time for TV time, as opposed to work time for family time or other higher quality personal activities. And that is a trade-off that a lot of people are far more willing to make. So I saw this split shift strategy on about half the time logs I studied. And people say, well, it sounds like I'd never get to relax. Well, nobody did it 7 nights a week, okay? Nobody even did it 5. I'm not even sure anyone did it 4. It was more like a 2 to 3 sort of thing. But it was a way people could work the hours they need to and yet do other things too. And so I've always thought it interesting. I'll read these articles, people saying, well, women will never work 50 hours a week because they'll never see their families. It's like, okay, well, there are a lot more hours than that in a week, for starters. But when women do work longer hours, that's how they tend to work them. That's what the tech executive was doing, because they want to protect time for other things. So that is how one way that people make it work. The second strategy, and if you take nothing else from our time here today, I hope you'll remember this phrase, think 168 hours, not 24. There are 24 hours in a day. There are 168 hours in a week. People always tell me there are not enough hours in the day to get to everything I want to get to, and sure, that's true. There aren't. But we don't live our lives in days. We live our lives in weeks. And things don't have to happen daily or at the same time every day in order to count it in our lives. You know, the 168 hours idea shows us just how much time we have. I mean, some of this is just math. If you work 40 hours a week and sleep 8 hours a night, so that's 56 hours a week, that leaves 72 hours for other things. That's quite a bit of time, right? How many people in here have like 40-hour week jobs, never thought about that, all right? 50 hours a week, you work 50 hours a week, you have 62 hours for other things. If you work 60 hours a week, you have 52 hours for other things. I mean, we're still talking a lot of time, even with way more than full-time hours. So the time is there. But it's also about, you know, avoiding this 24-hour trap. I see this 24-hour trap all the time with, let's be realistic here, exercise. Like, people tell me they want to exercise more, and then they talk themselves out of it because there's not a perfect time every single day, right? Like, I'd love to exercise, but I'm not the kind of person who can leave for an hour every day at lunch. Or I'd love to exercise, but I have a family I want to see. I can't go to the gym for an hour every night after work. Okay, well, you don't have to go every night. Maybe look at the whole of the week, see where it fits in. Maybe one morning you get up early and do something then. Another day, go for a brisk walk at lunch. Another day, you know, go to the gym while your partner can cover and you cover for this other person as well. Do something on the weekend, and wow, we just exercise 4 times a week. It didn't happen at the same time every day, but it didn't have to. And the funny thing is, you know, writing about time management, people often want to tell me about their daily habits. And then I ask a little bit more about it, and I find that their daily habits mean Monday through Thursday. But that is not daily. That is 4 times a week, right? And we often become a bit more obsessed about what happens in our life Monday through Thursday versus what happens the rest of the week. So I said I track my time on these weekly spreadsheets. They start Monday at 5 a.m. They go Monday to 5 a.m. If the week starts Monday at 5 a.m., guess where the halfway mark is? It is 5 p.m. Thursday. Now, I don't know about you, but 5 p.m. Thursday kind of sounds like the end of the week to me, but it is not. It is the exact halfway mark. There's just as much time after as there is before. And so I think we often get a little bit obsessed about, what is my balance? What is my balance? Well, we're thinking, what is my balance Monday through Thursday? But, you know, if there's just as much time on the other half, maybe it doesn't matter quite as much what your balance is Monday through Thursday, because your balance is entirely different the other half of the week. And those two balances may balance each other out. So think about that. Think 168 hours, not 24. And then the final strategy for moving time around, is, I guess this would be strategy 4, sub 3 or something, is to use your mornings. So if there's something amazing you want to do in life and you just can't find anywhere else in your schedule, try looking first thing in the morning. Mornings are a great time for getting stuff done. This is time you can have to yourself before everybody else wants a piece of you, like both at work and at home. And so that makes it a great time for those things that are important but not urgent. Could be, you know, professional things that you have long-term career aspirations that maybe even don't fit in your current job, think about them in the morning. Or maybe it's something you want to write the great American novel. You can do that in the morning. You can exercise in the morning. Then you only have to shower once. It's very efficient. You know, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to wait until the end of the day and see what time is left over to do these important things. But funny thing, get to the end of the day, not much time left over. Or if there is, you're too tired to do the great American novel. Getting up early is not necessarily easy, and I don't want people to be sleep deprived. And a lot of people tell me, like, oh, well, I'm not a morning person. And there are people who are night owls. But the way to tell is if you are writing the great American novel at night, then sure, you are a night owl. But a lot of people, when they say they're night owls, what they mean is that they're tired in the morning. But the reason they're tired in the morning is that they were up late looking at Instagram, watching TV, puttering around the house. You know, things maybe not the top priority in life. So if that's you, try cutting that off a little bit earlier, going to bed a little bit earlier, turning unproductive evening hours into productive morning hours. All right, so that was strategy 4, move time around. Strategy 5 is to build in space. So when I've studied people's time logs, I found that many of the most successful people I've ever studied have a surprising amount of white space in their lives. And as I've discussed this with them, I found that some of this is just practical. Everything takes longer than you think it will, right? If you think about getting in the car in the morning, there's that time when you're getting your shoes on. There's that time when you're in the car. The space between these two things is not zero, like especially if other people are getting in the car with you. If you think it is zero, that explains why you're always late and rushing, right? Or maybe during the day, if you have meetings stacked up every half hour, when one goes over, what happens to the rest? They kind of fall like dominoes through the day. Building in space means we can get caught up so we are not late and rushing. Very few people enjoy being late and rushing. But it is not just about practicality. It's also being about seizing opportunity. I really do think that open space invites opportunity in a way that a cluttered calendar can't. Somebody who reports to you has these great ideas for your business she wants to discuss. You'd be like, yeah, I got an 8-minute window at 4:12. 2 weeks from now. You want to come back then? Yeah, you don't want to be that person. You want to be able to have these conversations. How do we have white space? How can we build white space into our schedules? A couple things we can do. First, be very careful with the word yes. A few people nodding out here. We may have some people who are a bit promiscuous with the word yes. I think what happens is that it's hard to say no. And the further something is in the future, the more it feels like we're assigning it to a completely different person. Like, oh yeah, September me won't be busy. September me's got space for this. September you can totally take this on. Funny thing though, come September you will be the exact same person. You'll have just as much going on and you'll be just as busy, only now you will have this other commitment that you were lukewarm about in February stacked onto the pile, right? So a better question to ask yourself when asked to do something in the future is, would I do this tomorrow? Now, of course, you protest, well, I'm busy tomorrow. I'm booked up solid tomorrow, which is somewhat the point. But would you be tempted to, you know, move stuff around, cancel things in order to make this new opportunity fit? And if you would, great. You'll be just as excited in September, so go ahead and say yes. But if the answer is no, absolutely not, no way would I ever take this on tomorrow, probably that should be your answer for September as well. You can also build in space by doing what I call a calendar triage. So Friday afternoon, as you are planning your week ahead, your career, relationship, personal priorities, take a few minutes to look at what is already on your calendar. Ask yourself a few questions about it. What do I really not want to do? Does it absolutely have to happen? Maybe, but maybe not. And if you're going to cancel it, better to do it ahead of time so everyone can make other plans. You might be able to minimize things you can't kill. Maybe you have shorter meetings. Maybe you can combine meetings. You might look at your schedule and see you're meeting with the same people on Tuesday and Thursday. If you're disciplined about the agendas, you can get through both things on Tuesday. But what happens is when people get so busy is they just start tromping from one thing to the next, like middle schoolers changing classes. Like, here's my 2 o'clock, my 3 o'clock, my 4 o'clock. And then next thing you know, you're staring at the same people on Thursday that you were looking at on Tuesday, and you're like, jeez. Couple minutes strategizing about your calendar, you can buy yourself hours. You might be able to delegate things too. Maybe you've been doing something forever at work. You're a total rock star at it, which is great. It's always nice to feel successful, but it may be time to start passing it along to someone else as well. You can do these three things on the home front too. You can ignore, minimize, and outsource on the home front too. People always tell me, Laura, it costs money to outsource household chores, which is true, but it does not cost anything to lower your standards. So I'd highly recommend looking into that as well. Just to talk about this a little bit more, because I find that women have a lot of stories they tell themselves about what should be filling their time on the home front. And you can always listen to these stories. People will tell you in all seriousness, like, well, a good mother always makes her kids lunches. Or, you know, my mother always told me you should do a small load of laundry every day. Or other such things. Like, huh, well, do you know that to be true? And is this story serving you? Is this how you choose to be spending your time? And so I think it's important to examine these stories. I saw this with another time log. There's a lawyer was keeping track of her time for me. She was working extremely late one night in order to bill some extra time so she could have a reasonable life the rest of the week, which is great. You know, think 168 hours, not 24, gold star. So she was working really late one night. Her husband and the kids had been hanging out, having a grand old time, but they hadn't got the memo that she hoped the house would be spotless when she came home, right? So she comes home at 10 o'clock, toys all over the floor. What does her time log show her doing? Cleaning it up. And so I ask about this. I'm like, well, why? Is there going to be an 11 p.m. home inspection? Is somebody coming around to give you demerits for having toys on the floor? All right, you guys are laughing. How many people kind of operate with that story that there is an 11 p.m. home inspection? Okay. There isn't, all right? There is no 11 p.m. home inspection. No one is coming around to see, okay, she has toys on the floor, ooh, you know? And in fact, funny thing, those toys just coming out again the next morning, right? Whereas you will never get that hour back. So better to sit back, relax, kick up your feet, have a glass of wine, learn to live in a beautiful mess. People always tell me, well, I can't relax if my house is a mess. All right, clean one room, shut the door, sit in there. Frees up all kinds of space. All right, so that was strategy 5, build in space. Strategy 6 is to take care of ourselves. So, when I've studied the time logs of successful women, I have found, fascinatingly enough, that a couple of the stories we tell are maybe not true. One, we have this story out there that if you have a big job and you have a family, you will never sleep. That turns out not to be true. It turns out not to be true. In the time diary study I did, women who all had six-figure jobs, had kids at home, the average woman was sleeping 54 hours a week, which, if you do the math, is 7.8 hours on average per day. That was the average. Full 90% of the people I studied averaged more than 7 hours a day when you looked over the course of the week. Interesting, huh? So maybe we can, in fact, have a big job, have a family, and still get enough sleep. So good thing to keep in mind. A lot of the women were exercising too, and I don't think this is a coincidence because, you know, building a big career, raising a family, doing amazing things in your community, these are all meaningful, wonderful things, but they take a lot of energy. Where do we get energy? Well, for most people, sleep and exercise don't take time. They make time. So whatever time we sort of devote to these things within reason will be paid back in terms of more energy and more focus. If you look at your time diaries, if you do decide to keep track of your time, you'll notice that there are certain things that add to your energy levels and certain things that subtract from your energy levels. And if you've got too many things in a row that are subtracting from your energy level, you just can't keep going. You've got to put something in that adds to it. And I see this all the time. Like, people will be working away. They're like sitting at their desks to eat lunch, shoveling salad in, you know, telling themselves they're all productive. Look at me. I'm going to get out of here on time today because I'm working through lunch. And then a funny thing happens around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The person starts reading through the same email 6 times, right? And then while they're kind of glazing over from that email, you get an alert on your phone. Oh, somebody posted a photo on Facebook. Let me click on that. Next thing you know, you're looking at a lot of photos on Facebook. Photos of people you didn't like in high school anyway, right? And so you're going on through this, and then you see an ad over there. And next thing you know, you're over at Nordstrom, and you're shopping for shoes. And like 45 minutes can easily disappear down this rabbit hole. And what happened is that your brain needed a break, and you didn't give it a real break, so it took a fake one. But it would have been so much better to give it a real break, because it would have taken less time than this fake break that you have spent half your afternoon on. So if you track your time, and I hope you will, you'll see when your energy starts to fade. Right about now is a perfect time for it. And so you need to do something to add to your energy levels when you have these low periods of time. It could be exercise. It could be getting outside. It could be talking to someone you like. We can build in breaks into the week as a whole as well in order to manage our energy. I find that weekends are the secret weapon of successful people. And that doesn't mean that they work around the clock on weekends. It also doesn't mean that they never work on weekends, but I find that they view their weekends with an eye toward how can I add to my energy levels. A lot of us, when we think about our weekends, we go one of two ways. We're either like, you're so busy during the week that you get to the weekend, you're like, oh, I just want to do nothing. But it is impossible to do nothing. You will do something, but it might not be nearly as rejuvenating as what you might have done if you had put a little bit of thought into it, right? The other way it goes, it can be this whole, you know, rigmarole of chores and children's activities, and then you get to Monday morning and you're exhausted. That is not the way to go either. So the best thing to do is a couple of days ahead of time, maybe by the midweek point, think about your weekends and say, well, what three things can I do that will add to my energy levels? And then where can I fit them in? Doesn't have to be elaborate. I mean, you know, we want to go for a bike ride with a friend, want to have dinner with my spouse, want to go to worship services or volunteer somewhere. But as you're looking toward the weekend, say, well, then how can I make sure those happen? Because otherwise, what's going to happen is it's going to be Saturday, and you're all trying to figure out what to do, and you realize that Johnny has a birthday party, and Susie has a swim meet, and then, like, somebody else is coming over to drop something off, and you get to the end of the day, you're like, but I really wanted to go for my bike ride. Well, the time to have done that may have been the morning, right? But if you didn't think ahead of time of when that was going to happen, you won't get to do it. So think through it ahead of time. You'll hit Monday ready to go. All right, so that was strategy 6, take care of ourselves. We've got our strategies so far. Number 1 was to mind your hours, so keep track of your time. Strategy 2, look forward, asking what we want to do more of with our time, particularly in the near future. Strategy 3, first things first. We're going to treat our priorities as the equivalent of that broken water heater. Strategy 4, move time around. We're going to embrace work-life integration and think 168 hours, not 24. Strategy 5 was to build in space. So we have white space in our schedule so we can seize opportunity. Strategy 6 is to take care of yourself. And finally, strategy 7 is to use bits of time. So even if we've got all these great scheduling strategies, we can wind up with small bits of time that are hard to use well. 5 minutes while you're waiting for a phone call to start, 5 minutes while you're waiting for the bus. I know what most of us do with that time, right? Pull out the phone. Start deleting emails, right? All these newsletters you can't remember subscribing to. A lot of J.Crew ads, too, it turns out. And, you know, it feels incredibly productive to delete email. You're like, I don't know if I made progress on my personal or professional goals today, but I know for sure I got down from 150 unread messages to 100. Go me. I feel productive, right? But it isn't productive in the grand scheme of things, in that it's not going to say on your tombstone, she deleted all her email. Email expands to fill the available space. It is best to choose to spend certain blocks of time on email through your day. And then maybe we can use these little bits of time for other things that would add joy and meaning to our lives. So I challenge you to make a list of things that would add joy and meaning to your life that you could do in small bits of time. One thing I've been doing lately, I put the Kindle app on my phone. So I can now read ebooks in those little bits of time where I'm looking at my phone to fill the little bits of time. And it's somewhat amazing, or I could say embarrassing, how much literature I've actually managed to get through in these 5-minute spurts when I'm no longer saying, okay, let me just go see what's on Twitter. I click on my ebook instead. And you're reading real literature. Like you read literature in the supermarket checkout line, read literature on the bus. So that's one way you can use these little bits of time. But there's lots of other ways too. You know, a lot of people are becoming interested in meditation, for instance. This is something you can do in little bits of time. People are like, I don't have an hour to meditate. Guess what? You don't need an hour to meditate. 5 minutes, you're waiting for the phone call to start, thinking about your breath. If you are a religious person, you might use that time for prayer. It's another sort of form of meditation. You might decide that you are going to text a friend that you are thinking about. You might decide to think through your weekend in this little bit of time. You might start brainstorming ideas of things you want to spend more time doing in your life. You could write in a journal. There's all sorts of things you can do in these little bits of time. You can even go outside and like stare at the clouds. A lot of people feel like they have no time in life. They have no time for anything. And often what it is that we have time, but we're looking at our phones. I recently did a time diary study. 900 people track their time for a day. I asked them all sorts of questions about it. It's going to be part of a book that's coming out in May called Off the Clock. But one of the most fascinating things I found is that the people who feel best about their time and who feel like they have the most time, that time is abundant, spend a lot fewer minutes checking their phone than the people who feel that time is scarce, that they don't know where the time is going, that they are rushed and harried. So something to think about, right? Little bits of time, use them for things that are joyful, meaningful to you, and you will have a lot more fun in your life. So those are my 7 favorite time management strategies. I'd be happy to take some questions if people want to line up at the microphone so everyone can hear you. Derek, or you want to lead it off? Or okay. Oh, yeah, you jump over there.
Thanks again, Laura. So I had a softball question here that I thought was a really good one. Then I thought that a lot of this reminded me of people who do, like, diet contests within an office. And there's accountability behind being able to report production to others. Is that something that you would endorse in, say, time tracking or any of the other
Yeah, studies? Well, you have to know what motivates you. And some people are definitely motivated by either knowing that other people are watching them or, you know, that they've gotten this commitment to their colleagues. So, sure. I think it would be great if you and your friends all decide to track your time together, share your time logs. And there's some element of that, you know, the physics principle that the act of observing something changes the thing being observed. So you'll probably have a better week the week you're tracking your time because you aren't going to write down, you don't want to write down, like, the 3-hour Instagram bender, right? And so right there, knowing that you'll be sharing that time log can help you make better choices. Yes, go ahead and start us off.
Hi, Laura. Are we on?
Yeah, okay. We're on.
Great talk. Amazing you did it without slides, teleprompter, notes, anything.
We're just a one-woman show up here.
Awesome. My question is, when you do a time log, what are the buckets?
The buckets for like the categories of activities you do. It's really kind of whatever is in your life, right? Because, you know, somebody who's a full-time student will have different categories than somebody who's maybe working full-time or someone who's a stay-at-home mom or something
working
like that.
Working mom, for example.
Working mom, for example. Okay, well, probably, you know, work is one, obviously. Commuting time, if that's, you know, if you commute to a job. Maybe personal care, sleep. I often just say kid time because it's sort of that mash of who knows. I don't even want to try to describe what it is I'm doing. But if I'm caring for my small kids, that might be what I say. Or it would be TV, you know, housework, if you want to break up housework more into little bits, like, you know, cooking or cleaning or something like that, laundry. But housework or errands could be a category. The things you do, like, you know, so exercise, if you volunteer, if you do stuff with your friends, if you do stuff with your spouse, any, like, religious activities you do. I mean, so it's really about, like, what you do in your life. For many people, there are the major ones of, like, sleep, work, personal care, car, family. But beyond that, it's sort of, you know, you can see what kind of time you have. And it doesn't have to be exact. Here's something I want to say, because you know, I've sometimes spoken to groups of like consultants, and they come into this whole idea of like, well, it needs to be mutually exclusive and comprehensively exhaustive, like of my different categories. Right? Well, you know, you have to really define it down to make sure that each category is specific to something. That's not the point. The point is so you can see fascinating stuff. Like, I thought I was working 50 hours a week. I started tracking my time continuously. Guess what? I was working 40 hours a week. Huh. Interesting. I thought I never spent time in the car because I have a home office, right? So why would I be spending time in the car? Guess what? I spend more than an hour a day in the car. Good to know that, right? So it's more stuff like that when you figure out broadly where the time goes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, come on. We got to have more questions. You guys, I left time this time. All right, here we have another one coming up.
So this is really practical information. Okay. There was a recent presentation by Daniel Pink, mm-hmm. just came out with the WEN, who takes a little more systematic scientific approach to timing.
Yes.
Do you have a professional writer's reaction to,
to WEN?
You know, the social dialogue of ideas?
Yeah, I think WEN was fascinating. And I think his main point, and he's always an entertaining read, is that we systematically undervalue questions of when things happen. It seems impossible to us that when is as important a question as what. And yet, when matters a lot. Like, if there was some software program that could boost high schoolers' test scores by like 5 to 10%, people would be all over it. Well, we know something that boosts high schoolers' test scores by 5 to 10%, and that's don't start high school at 7:45 a.m. and in the morning, right? Because they can't concentrate. If you start it later, they do better. And yet people don't do that, because we don't believe that the issue of timing could possibly be that important. So I thought it was great to think about these questions of when things happen are often as important as what is happening. There is very good evidence that people are more careful in the morning, right? Doctors and nurses are more likely to wash their hands in the morning. Think about that, all right? But what happens for many people is that we lose intensity as the day goes on. And we have to get it back by either taking breaks or consciously doing something to make us make the right decision. So it does matter. Time does matter a lot. Hi.
So a lot of what you've talked about today is about women's approach to time and the mm-hmm. stories women tell themselves about time. Was there anything in tracking men and how they think about time that was fundamentally different in terms of either how they deal with
yeah.
it or think about it?
So it's an interesting question, the difference between men and women and time. I mean, largely people approach time the same way in the sense that we all feel like we don't have enough hours in the day and we all have things we want to do with the limited time. I will say that, I mean, one of the things that has drawn me to studying women is I think a lot of women still walk around with the story in their head that work and personal lives are opposed. That there is a trade-off between the two. Whatever you give to one, you are taking away from the other. That's the whole balance metaphor, unfortunately. For one to go up, the other has to go down. And I don't think men as much walk around with that story because men learn from birth that they are supposed to be working, right? That it's not a choice, it is just what men do. And that is changing, of course. There's many men who are coming up with all kinds of new ways of approaching masculinity and being involved with their families and things like that, but they walk around not with that story. So for them, they're not saying, oh, because I was at work, I was failing my family. It's like, I'm doing this for my family, and here I am involved with my family as well. And I think it would be great if more women walked around with that story, too.
The notion of the time journal is very interesting, but I wonder how, I'm sure a lot of people do a lot of multitasking, mm-hmm. right? And I have three young ones that I have to get out the door in the morning, and so the concept of family time, right, when you're making lunches, getting breakfast ready, making sure they get dressed, right? It's not truly that concept of family time that you would like to appreciate and say, wow, I spent, you know, 30 hours this week with my family time, but it was really you going, eat that, what are you doing, right? I mean, in the middle, you're checking emails, right? Right? So it's that concept of, like, how do you really capture that to say, well, this is a priority, and I'm really glad that I, you know, put this above, and mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of where that struggle is, as far as I think.
Yeah.
Like, to spend
well,
more,
not all moments are going to be. Yeah. Not all moments are going to be peak on the mountaintop sort of moments, right? Like, I mean, we can't have transcendence in all things. Sometimes you're just trying to get people to eat breakfast, but I do think some of that can be, you know, if you sort of have a mindset of like, this is time I have with my family. Because in fact, a lot of women, again, they're walking around with a story that I've never seen that my kids, because they're not even counting that. But you are seeing them, and you are interacting with them, and they are learning from you, and they are building that relationship with you. And doing that day by day is an investment in that relationship, because you're there. And the simple fact of being there is what makes it the time that you have together. I would say also, though, that we can be intentional about this time in the sense of one of the reasons people feel like work takes up more space in their lives than it actually does is because we are intentional about work time. Like you show up at work kind of having the idea of what you need to get through by the end of the day. These are my things I'm working toward. We don't do that as much with like our relationship time, our personal time. But if you have an idea for like your evening, like, oh, I'm coming home at 6:30. I'm here till like 10:30 when I go to bed. What is my intention for these 4 hours? I want to relax, of course, but maybe I'd like to, you know, go for a family walk after dinner, or maybe we'd like to all, you know, make Sundays together, or maybe we'd like to read a chapter in this book together at night. Having an intention can make that time feel bigger than what it is. Yes? Sorry.
What do you tell people who use their time to manage stress or chaos in the house? Which is like, you know, let me cook on the weekend so I don't have to deal with that during the week, because then everybody's going to come home hungry from mm-hmm. their activities, starving, or, you know, the 11 o'clock cleaning police could be your family or your spouse or somebody.
Oh, I hope your spouse is not the 11 o'clock cleaning police. So, you know, it's interesting. As I studied time, I found that many of the women who spent the highest amounts of time on housework and errands were in fact the people who had what looked like good systems for it. Like they spent all Saturday shopping and then they spent all Sunday making meals for the week. But guess what that meant? That they had no less leisure time, right? Whereas, because what would happen is they'd still spend time on the weekdays, like reheating that stuff, and then they'd make a side dish too, because if you're the kind of person who's cooking ahead on the weekends, you're also the kind of person who's making the side dishes to go with the stuff you made on the weekends. And so then they were just spending all this time on housework and errands and not having that sort of downtime that I think you're better off sort of thinking about like, well, how could I, maybe we make, you know, stuff on Monday that can go for 2 days and then we eat that as leftovers on Tuesday and then we cook again on Wednesday when we have leftovers on Thursday and we go out on Friday. Well, then we only had to cook twice and maybe it's simple enough that, you know, it only took 20 minutes anyway. And so you have less time to do that. And maybe I only do it Monday and my spouse does it Wednesday, right? So then we're only down to one time a week and we didn't have to give up our whole weekend to do it. So that's kind of how I think about that. Yes, sorry, which one of you was first to the microphone?
I just have a question on, I love the shifting work schedule. I do that all the time and I've done that for years actually. But what's weird is that sometimes company culture has a hard time with that. So there's a lot of people at my office where I may not get a lot of emails at night or first thing in the morning or over the weekends, but that's kind of how I work. That's how I make my life work. Are you seeing that change with companies at all? I mean, I think the millennials are probably pushing that a little bit, but I guess, do you have any thoughts on that from a company culture perspective and how you think about that shifting schedule?
Yeah, I mean, the shifting schedule, I mean, yes, it can be abused in the sense of like when people are sending emails at night because it works for them, it can look to other people like they might have been working the whole time. And I've seen that in workshops, in fact, that like the working mom was sending all her emails at 9 o'clock at night, but the people who reported to her were like, oh my God, she's working till 9 p.m. And then I have to answer the emails that she sends me right at 9 p.m. because she's my boss. So she had to actually get up and be like, don't answer my emails at 9 p.m. I'm sending them then because it works for me. That's not when I expect you to email. And so I think if you are a manager, and it's important to have that conversation, that I'm sending this because I want to at this time because it works for me, I do not expect you to respond except, you know, during work hours or whatever it is. And so like some companies have even encouraged managers to like save it as a draft and send it out at 8 a.m. so people don't start checking in the middle of the night to see what their bosses sent them. So that's something to think about too. Yes?
I have a question on the idea of downtime. How much control do you think people really have over how much downtime they need? Like, can you push through? Like, if I think I need to turn off my brain for an hour at the end of the day and watch TV, is that real? Can I push through that and actually like make that an active hour? Is it possible I just need downtime?
Well, you might just need a break, yeah. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, people take breaks. It's just whether they look intentional or not. And so you want to, as much as possible, have the intentional breaks. You know, there's certain things we can't, some people need more downtime than others. Some people need more sleep than others. There's nothing you can do about that. You just have to work within what you have. So, all right, we got Derek here.
I'll shut things down. All right, everyone, big round of applause for Laura, please. And Laura will be in the exhibit hall signing her book.
Yeah.
I've already got mine signed, so I'll encourage you guys to do that immediately after this event.
Yeah, I'd love to chat with people, but I have to go quick over there to sign, so please just come see me over there if you want. You don't have to buy a book to talk.
Thanks, everybody.